Well, I'm speaking this morning on, I think, what most of us would consider the ultimate woman of faith, and that is Mary. The Mary. There's a few Marys, so I just need to clarify. And there she is in the very iconic way that I think many of us picture her at this time. This is the statue, the Pietà. And this is, how many of you have seen this sculpture in person? You've actually seen it. It is really quite something to see, isn't it? It's a picture of it doesn't do it justice. It's almost like the marble is alive, and it is quite lovely. Well, what do we know about Mary? She was the mother of Jesus. What more do you need to know, right? She was cousin to Elizabeth, and Elizabeth, we know, was of the lineage of Aaron, which is the priestly class, the priestly line. And so we know that it is likely that Mary was also in that priestly line. Now, in some Christian traditions, Mary is venerated, and she's often referred to as the Blessed Virgin Mary. That's her name. She's not just Mary, she is the Blessed Virgin Mary all the time. She's also referred to as Mary, the Mother of God. But in the evangelical tradition, Mary kind of makes an appearance at Christmas. She's usually dressed in blue, sitting demurely by a manger or cradle. She makes an appearance sometime during Advent, and she shows up in the Christian pageant, often about this tall, and by a very, very proud girl with very proud parents that their daughter got to play Mary in the Christmas pageant that year. But then we don't really think or hear about Mary a great deal outside of that. Now, interestingly, in the Orthodox tradition, March 25th is celebrated as the Annunciation of the Lord, and that was just this past week. That was 9 months before December 25th, right? So a good date to be celebrating the Annunciation of the Lord. And this gives this event more prominence than pretending that it only happens during Advent in the month before Christmas, which is often when we think about it. So, no, got it too far. There we go. Going to try and get this just right. Okay, is that better? I think that's better. Be that as it may, when we only focus on Mary at Christmas time, it only focuses on Mary as kind of the vessel of the baby, Jesus. That's kind of her only role, is she carried Jesus, and then Jesus was born. And yet, even at Christmas, I really noticed over this Christmas season that we enjoyed singing the Christmas song, Mary, Did You Know? And sort of asking the question, did Mary know all of that was going to happen to Jesus? Well, of course she didn't when he was born, but she did walk through his entire life. And we're going to touch down on those little points where we see Mary throughout Jesus' life. Mary was involved after Jesus was born. And she was present at his death, and she was present at his ascension into heaven. Now, the events of Jesus' birth are pretty dramatic. It's why we love to have the Christmas pageant, because there is such drama at Christ's birth. And this would have been huge in a mother's life, that, you know, there was his annunciation, the beginning of Jesus was in fact announced by an angel. There we have it. And, you know, no matter how dramatically you want to represent it, the fact that Mary responded in fear and the angel had to say, "Fear not," meant that this was a really big and dramatic event. Then for the actual birth, there was this trip to Bethlehem. The baby was born in a stable. They couldn't find any space inside of a house. And so Jesus was born in this stable in a barn, laid in a manger, visited by shepherds and later by wise men, fleeing in the middle of the night to Egypt, to a foreign country. Egypt's not really close. They had to travel quite a distance to get there. And then returning years later, as we see in Matthew chapter 2, when there was a change, a regime change, shall we say. So all of this was a great deal of drama. We don't really know that much about, you know, how Mary and Joseph responded to these things, but we know that there were a lot of dramatic events, and we can think to ourselves, how would I have responded in that situation? How would I have responded with this, these dramatic events going on around the birth of a firstborn child? Well, we do see a little glimpse of unfolding, and we are going to be, I see people with there, hold these up, you guys. Hold up. We're going to be looking at Bibles this morning. This is, here we go, the dramatic example of Bibles. So we're going to be looking at some Bible passages, and I don't have them on the overhead. So if there are people who would like to have Bibles and follow along, I will be reading the passages, but some of you will like to likely want to follow along yourself. So after the return from Egypt, the next time we see Mary is in the this trip to Jerusalem. And we know it as Jesus at the temple, but there was a trip to Jerusalem, and the whole family had gone, and then on the way back, something happens. So this is Luke chapter 2, verses 41 to 52. Every year his parents went to Jerusalem for the feast of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the feast according to the custom. After the feast was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they traveled on for a day. Then they began looking for him among their relatives and friends. When they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. They went back to Jerusalem. Anybody ever lost a child along the way? Did you go back to look for the child? How did you feel? Terrified. Okay. This might have been, they went back in a panic to look for him after 3 days of panic-stricken, frantic looking. They found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for him." 12-year-old boy answered, "Why were you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he was saying to them. Then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them, but his mother treasured all of these things in her heart. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. Well, there's a lot in here. We do understand that in that era, there was no helicopter parenting. When the group was ready to leave, there was an expectation that everybody, especially a 12-year-old boy, would, you know, get his stuff together and come along and be with the group. And it would not be that unusual that he would be hanging around with the 12-year-old boys or his cousins or somebody, some other family and friends. And so, you know, parents don't sort of run around and necessarily count heads. It's just an expectation we're going, he's along with us. Except he wasn't. But what we see of Mary is quite interesting because she is the one who rebukes Jesus. We don't see Joseph rebuking Jesus. We see Mary rebuking Jesus. Which is kind of interesting because that's, you know, it's a pretty patriarchal society. And it is an insight into the relationship between Mary and Jesus that here she is in this fairly intimidating situation. You see Mary kind of in the background here. In the back, you see it up here. I see it down here. So there's Mary with her, you know, white headscarf in the back, kind of marching into the temple with all of these very learned rabbis around her son, and they're, you know, admiring and astonished at his learning and this incredible, you know, educational discussion and dialogue is going on. And she is walking in saying, Jesus, what have you done? Why are you, like, what is up? And he responds to her and then is obedient as a child to his parents. But it's just a kind of an interesting interchange that it's Mary sort of challenging Jesus and Jesus' response. This is the last time that we see Joseph in the picture. We do see Mary again, but it is thought that at this sometime, you know, between 12 and age 30 when Jesus starts his ministry, Joseph dies and he doesn't seem to be around or involved during the time period that that Jesus is involved in his active ministry that we read about in Scripture. So from this time, we see that Jesus is obedient to his parents, but we also see something about Mary and something about her character in verse 51, where Mary treasured all these things and pondered them in her heart. So this is actually all of these dramatic events of Jesus' birth and fleeing to Egypt and coming back and then Jesus at the temple. And Mary is somebody who thinks about things, who remembers things, who tries to understand things, and who has these treasured memories of her sons growing up. When I had my firstborn son back 23 years ago, I thought a lot that Christmas about what it must, the first Christmas, my son was about 2 months old at that point, I thought, what must it have been like to have been Jesus' mother, to have raised this boy that you knew had such a special destiny. And you think, you know, what was Jesus like as a boy? This is kind of what we see. This is Jesus' growing up story. This is the entire photo album of him as a child. So it's just a little tiny glimpse of that. But it does make you wonder You know, as all of us are children and had parents and had those relationships with our parents, some of us have children and have raised those children. But what must it have been like to have been Mary and Joseph and raised this extraordinary child? Because at least from the time he was 12, he grew in wisdom and stature and favor with God and men. So this is a boy who gets along with people, who impresses people. It probably would have been difficult for Mary not to have been extremely proud of her son. And maybe there's nothing wrong with that. But it is this window. And then gives us perhaps a glimpse of the next touchdown point. And the next touchdown point is the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And this is the wedding at Cana, found in John chapter 2, verses 1 to 5. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My time has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding large quantities. And we know that Jesus turned this water into very fine wine. But what I wanted to focus on was the interchange between Mary and Jesus here. It's very interesting. So you're sort of thinking, okay, Mary is clearly used to looking to Jesus to deal with problems. Jesus is just, okay, so first of all, he is the oldest boy in the family. It appears that Joseph has probably died. So Jesus may well have assumed the senior male role in the family. But clearly, Mary has come to depend on Jesus and knows he is the kind of guy who's just going to make stuff happen. He's going to deal with stuff. So was she pushing him to do a miracle? Was that how she was used to it? That would be an awfully nice son to have. Fix this, fix that, deal with this, deal with that. Maybe not necessarily likely that Jesus was running around. He's not Harry Potter. He's not running around doing magic in the household. But he clearly is the kind of man that can be relied upon to have solutions to problems. So she is pushing Jesus into, you know what, deal with this problem, and you people over here, you know, he's going to deal with this, so you just trust him. This was not necessarily a family wedding, although it may well have been. But Mary wants to have a problem dealt with. It was extremely socially awful, beyond awkward. It was socially awful to run out of wine at a wedding. Weddings went on for days. The host family was supposed to, you know, provide food and wine, and everybody was supposed to have a wonderful time. And here, oh my goodness, they've run out of wine. This is going to be terrible. Everybody's going to know about it. It's going to be awful for the family. Jesus, please fix this problem. Who knows how she expected him to fix it, but she knew he was going to fix it. And in fact, he does do a miracle. And this is recorded here as kind of being his first miracle. Now, turning water into wine is quite dramatic. fixing a problem at a wedding is less dramatic, if you think about it in those kinds of terms. But Mary just relies on Jesus, knows he's going to do stuff, even when he says, I don't want to fix this problem. I don't want to deal with this problem. It's not my time. Why are you asking me to do this? And she's like, no, he's just going to do it. He's just going to make it happen. But an interesting interchange between Mary and her son right at the beginning of his ministry. So, and, you know, perhaps Jesus is kind of saying, you know what, Mom? I'm not going to deal with everything here. I'm not going to deal with everything. I'm now going to start to change. Because he's now entered into his ministry. He's got his disciples with him. He's moving out of being in that family orb. And the next time we see Mary's interaction with Jesus, this becomes more clear. And in fact, it kind of looks like Jesus is going to reject his family. Mary and the brothers of Jesus go to visit Jesus at a particular point in his ministry. This is recorded in the first three Gospels. I'm going to read the one from Luke, chapter 8, verses 19 to 21. And this is where we see that things have changed. So Luke chapter 8, verses 19 to 21. Now Jesus' mother and brothers came to see him, but they were not able to get near him because of the crowd. Someone told him, "Your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to see you." He replied, "My mother and brothers are those who hear God's word and put it into practice." Well, it's widely thought that Mary and Jesus' brothers are coming to see him to try to rein him in, to try to be critical of him. They're not just coming for a little, hey, you know, let's go out for dinner. You know, let's just have a little social time. Haven't seen you in a while. You know, you didn't come home for Passover. This is more the kind of thing of, this is, okay, and I don't know how many of you have ever experienced this. I have not within my family context, but I know families who have, where you think, you know what, there's one person in this family who's kind of gone off the rails a bit, and the rest of us need to come around and just sort of bring this person back into who they are and where they belong. And so it was that kind of visit. It was, this isn't just your mom coming to visit. This is, you know, there's some accountability here. What do you think you're doing? You know, this is not how you should be acting. You need to stop this and go a different way. And Jesus, of course, knows this, but also is taking the opportunity to distance himself from his birth family. And to say, and how painful this would have been for his mother and brothers to say, that is not my family unit anymore. My ministry and my life is focused around the people who want to follow God and want to follow me. And so Mary has probably traveled some distance, has some dissonance in her heart, has some things she wants to talk to Jesus about, and rather than go and say, you know, look, this is my new life now, this is where I need to go, he doesn't offer any explanation to them. Now, not that we see anyway. He may afterwards have had some kind of private audience with them, but at the time and publicly, they're out there, and he's in here, And this is his place now. So we've gone from Mary having the right to come to Jesus when he's 12 years old and haul him out of the temple and take him home, to him saying, not this time. Not this time. You did that when I was 12. Not this time. Now, this is my place. And you belong somewhere else. So her mother's worry about him has to be put aside, or she has to deal with that herself, because he is not going to come alongside with her any longer. But that doesn't mean that she has completely left him. And the next time we see Mary, now it is Palm Sunday, and there's quite a possibility that she was in that crowd singing Hosanna. We don't know that. The next time that we see her is at the cross. And so this has got to be the most challenging thing. You think of the role of a mother and all that she has been with him through, and to see him on a cross would be so much to bear. And Jesus reaches out to her at that moment of her deepest pain, and he is on a cross. He cares for her. So, John chapter 19, 25 to 27. We have the triumvirate of Marys at the cross. Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Dear woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, this disciple took her into his home. Well, Jesus had this role as the eldest son. In that culture, he was responsible for his mother after his father died. And now, the disciple John is going to take on that role. There seem to have been brothers of Jesus that came to visit him with Mary in the last reading that we looked at. But instead, Jesus appoints somebody else to take on that eldest son role. It is incredible of the things that Jesus said while he was on the cross, and those will all be covered on the service on Friday, the seven last words of Christ. But this was one of the things he was concerned about, was the future of his mother. But you think about Mary being there at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, at the wedding at Cana, where she is looking to Jesus. He can just fix stuff. He's going to solve problems. You could have total trust and confidence in him. And there she is standing near the cross, near enough to hear Jesus' words, looking up at him, seeing him die unjustly. And you think, what must she have been thinking and feeling? Even the comfort of having him look down and care and interact with her directly, you know, we always look and say, no parent should ever have to lose a child. And that's intensely painful. To watch him die on a cross would be almost unbearable. But Jesus has cared for her and reached out for her and taken care to ensure her future. Now, possibly because she was now being cared for by the disciple who was about to become an apostle, John, Mary is part of the group of disciples after that. And the next time we see her is at Jesus' ascension. So she is around when he is at the resurrection. It's possible that she was in the garden the morning of his ascension on Easter morning. They mention a bunch of Marys, but it's not specifically that she was there. So it would have been normal that she would have gone to care for the body. But that's not certain, but she may well have been there for that event as well. But we do know that she was specifically mentioned at his ascension. So in Acts chapter 1, we see her starting at verse 9. And reading through to 14. After he said this, he was taken up before their very eyes, and a cloud hid him from their sight. They were looking intently up into the sky as he was going, when suddenly two men dressed in white stood beside them. "Men of Galilee," they said, "why do you stand here looking into the sky? This is the same Jesus who has been taken from you into heaven. He will come back in the same way you have seen him go into heaven." Then they returned to Jerusalem from the city called the Mount of Olives, a Sabbath day walk from the city. When they arrived, they went upstairs to the room where they were staying. Those present were Peter, John, James, and Andrew, Philip and Thomas, Bartholomew and Matthew, James son of Alphaeus, and Simon the Zealot, and Judas son of James. They all joined together constantly in prayer, along with the women and Mary the mother of Jesus, and with his brothers. So Mary, at this point, appears to be involved with the ministry. Peter then goes on to sort of have a discussion about what they're going to do and where they're going to go next. So she is a committed woman of faith who is part of this ongoing ministry after Jesus' death and resurrection and ascension into heaven. It seems from the significant parts in Luke and in the beginning of Acts that Luke interviewed her as part of his gospel writing. And he is the one that mentions that she treasured up these things and pondered them in her heart and then, of course, shared them with Luke when he asked. So she's involved in some way in the ongoing ministry out to the world to be witnesses and make disciples of all nations. She's not mentioned again by name in the rest of the Bible, but there is some speculation that she's kind of mentioned in passing. So in the second book of John, which is a nice, very short book. So in 2 John, verse 1:1, it says, "To the chosen lady and her children, whom I love in the truth, and not only I, but also all those who know the truth." There's some speculation that the chosen lady is, in fact, Mary. And also in Revelation 12:1. Oh, that's Mary with the disciples in the upper room, where Mary has quite a prominent place. So then in Revelation 12:1, it reads, "A great and wondrous sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and a crown of 12 stars on her head. She was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth." So there's in Roman Catholic tradition, this Queen of Heaven, as it were, that is mentioned in Revelation 12:1 and 2, is in fact Mary, and she's often depicted in art in this way, Mary, Queen of Heaven, in this kind of way. There is a tradition in Catholic and Orthodox belief that holds that Mary ascended bodily into heaven, and so didn't die, but like Elijah, went directly to heaven in bodily form. So while Protestants don't venerate saints, we shouldn't ignore the incredible example of faith that Mary represents. She was there at the beginning of Jesus' life, submitting to God's will, even though that would have been very challenging in her life. And, you know, we know that Joseph had fought to divorce her quietly, but only the intervention of an angel of God prevented that. She could technically have faced stoning because she was unmarried at that point. She was betrothed but not yet married to Joseph. So she submitted to God's will despite the personal challenges that it posed for her. She was there at the cross. No, despite the fact this would have been incredibly painful, and she would have been deeply grieving at the cross. And she was there with the disciples at the beginning of their ministry as well. She kept the faith despite the fact that sometime during Jesus' life she may have thought he was going too far or doing the wrong thing. She was a faithful follower despite having the role of a mother as well. So she is a wonderful woman of faith and an incredible example to us of how to trust in Jesus. And I think we can listen to her words at the wedding of Cana: "Do whatever he tells you to do."